Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, training for the Canadian death race leads to a near-death experience.
When the bear stood up, it was about 10, 15 feet away from us. And I grabbed my pepper spray right away, had it in my front chest pocket, pulled it right away, pulled the safety off it, and the bear stood up, looked at us, and started coming for us. And it happened so fast, and by the time I got my pepper spray out, the bear was on the road, and I sprayed her when she was about 4 or 5 feet away from us.
Running from domestic violence.
And sometimes there would be stressful stuff going on at work or other stuff I had to deal with outside of work. When I could go for a run, it made me a better mom. I was happier and more grounded when I was able to go pick up my kids. And a happier mom makes for a happier life for everybody all around.
And sharing the journey with visually impaired runners.
When you're having a great run, when you're sort of running in rhythm, in a nice rhythm with someone, it's a pretty amazing, pretty special feeling, I would say, for myself at least. But also, I mean, I think just sort of the sense of community and camaraderie that develops from that. And I think it also, it keeps everyone sort of on track and accountable. If you've made a commitment to myself, if I arranged to meet up with a guide runner, I mean, Gotta show up. I said I'd be there, and I think that it works the opposite way too. So I think we sort of hold each other to account and support and encourage each other.
On this edition of iRun Radio, we'll talk to visually impaired Paralympian Jason Dunkerley, who's one of the volunteer leaders of a running club in Ottawa. We'll talk to a runner who had a face-to-face confrontation with a bear on a recent training run, and the remarkable story of a woman who ran every day for 100 consecutive days, even as she was escaping a violent relationship. Let's get things started now with the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
How are you doing this week?
Love and life, my friend.
What's the craziest encounter you've ever had with wildlife when you've been out running?
I was running in the wintertime, and a giant poodle jumped on me. This white giant poodle jumped on me, and the lady says, "Don't worry, he's friendly." And I said, "Get him off of me. He's friendly. I don't, I'm not. Get off of me, this huge dog."
Right.
Yeah.
I thought this was going to be a polar bear story when you said you were running in the winter.
It was a poodle.
Okay.
Polar bear to me,
Yeah.
Keep your animals tied up, man.
Yeah. I was running in England one time, and I was running along this canal. I remember it vividly, in Yorkshire. And there was a group of people standing around, and this dog that was not on a leash just ran over to me, and it probably weighed more than I did. And it jumped up, and it put its paws on my shoulders. That's how tall it was when it jumped up. And started barking, and the owner came over and grabbed the dog, and then gave it a lecture, like, "Do not do that. I told you before not to do that." And I felt like saying, "He doesn't speak English." talking.
This is why your dog does these kind of things.
Talking is not going to solve the problem here. Anyway, I ask, of course, because we have Phil Troyer on the show today, and you shared with me his story about how he was training for the Canadian death race, and he encountered bears on this run, and not just one, multiple bears.
I know, forget about that. We have a nice conversation going too, and folks should check out our Facebook page, because everybody's saying the same stuff we are. It's like their strangest animal encounter.
Yeah,
it's pretty lively. Snakes and foxes and just different things. I don't know, it's too much for me.
Yeah, I was running one time about 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, early in the morning, and I was running. I took the path by the Ottawa River, and I turned off the path and started running towards the city again, and running in the distance towards the path, which is in more of a wildlife kind of area, there was some animal that was either a huge fox or I don't know what. Maybe I don't think there are wolves around here, but that would have been my first guess.
Yeah.
And it was not a dog, because there was no collar, there was nobody who owned the dog anywhere within sight. I was the only other human being around. You know, I was the only human being around. So I don't know what this was. I could only see it from a distance, and maybe it was just a big fox. But, yeah, I've seen
That's
foxes.
Enough. A big fox is enough for me. I don't think you need to say just a big fox. A big fox will do damage if it wraps its big fox teeth around your tiny running ankle.
Yeah. I've seen foxes before. There were a couple of foxes when I went for a run in Prince Edward Island one time, but I have never seen bears. There is a wooded area that I cut through sometimes on my way to a running path, and I always think, especially when it's at an odd time, like it's early in the morning and there's no one else around, I always think this is the time there's going to be a bear there or something. You know, because once in a while you hear about a bear wandering into the city, but it's never happened. I've never seen a bear up close and personal, but that was quite a scare for Phil. He's going to tell us the story, but I mean, that was a big deal. This was...
Well, the Canadian Death Race, I mean, look at what it's called.
Yeah.
The Canadian Death Race is the only race in the country that, like, a story like this is actually good publicity for it. Like, they want to see a bear when they go out. You know, yeah, they want to see bears when they participate in that. That's...
Well, and there's a polar bear marathon in northern Manitoba, too. Let's not forget about that one.
You'll catch me at the Ottawa Marathon. I'm not just too.
But you've got your story with the poodle, so that trumps all of them.
That's pretty tough, right?
You get full marks for that. Spoken like a guy who spent most of his life in New York City and Toronto, right?
You're not
the wildlife guy.
No, sir.
You're the urban wildlife.
But good luck to everybody else out there who enjoys that kind of thing.
All right. Ben, we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Appreciate it, my friend.
That is Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up next, running into a bear on a training run through the woods. For some, they are a brother, a sister, a mother, or a father. But for all of us, they are heroes. Show your support for the men and women of the Canadian Armed Forces. Join iRun at the 11th Annual Canada Army Run, presented by BMO, in support of Soldier On and the Support Our Troops Fund. Join us as we run, walk, and roll through the streets of Ottawa Gatineau with our military in Canada's most inspiring race, the 2018 Canada Army Run, September 23rd. This is no ordinary race. Register at armyrun.ca. Our first guest this week was training for the Canadian Death Race in Alberta when he and another runner encountered a family of bears. Phil Troyer, thank you for joining us on iRun Radio.
Thank you.
So you were training for the Canadian Death Race, which is challenging enough on its own, the race is, but the training turned out to be an adventure for you. Tell me what happened when you and another runner encountered some bears.
Yeah, so there was a group of about 12 of us left Grand Prairie here. We headed south to Grand Cache. It was about a two-hour drive down there. And the plan was to run leg 4 and 5 of the death race. So a total of about 55 kilometers. And we left the highway. I had run that leg before for a training run. Lisa and I were in the front of the group a little ways with her dog. And about 7 or 8 kilometers off the highway, heard a noise on the side of the road. And we looked to the left of the road we were on, and a bear stood up and recognized it as a grizzly bear and had time to grab my pepper spray, and that was about it.
So you were well-equipped. You had pepper spray with you in case you encountered bears.
You know, in hindsight, I don't know what I would have done any different. I don't think there is anything I could have done differently. Lisa and I both had pepper spray. At the time, we were actually going up a fairly steep hill, so we were power walking. We were talking because we were discussing stopping and actually putting on a windbreaker because it was really windy. And so, we were making noise. We had a dog with us. Luckily, the dog was on a leash. And when the bear stood up, it was about 10, 15 feet away from us. And I grabbed my pepper spray right away, had it in my front chest pocket, pulled it right away, pulled the safety off it, and the bear stood up, looked at us, and started coming for us. And it happened so fast. And by the time I got my pepper spray out, the bear was on the road, and I sprayed her when she was about 4 or 5 feet away from us.
Wow. Did you have time to appreciate what was going on there, and you mentioned it all happened so quickly. Were you afraid in that moment, or were you just reacting?
You know, I think it was reacting more than anything. I spend a lot of time in the woods, obviously training with running, but also hunting and just hiking. So I spent a lot of time in the woods. I grew up in the woods with my dad in the Yukon and my brothers. So it kind of became instinctive, but you can't train for something like that. So as soon as I sprayed the sow, she ran to our left, and then the two cubs came out of the bush, and they came out on our right-hand side. And so now we're standing between the sow and the cubs, and that's, again, I knew we were in a really bad situation. So from there, it was just like, it was chaos. It was like bears running around everywhere. I don't remember exactly what happened. I remember I sprayed the two cubs. And then I think I did about four or five sprays altogether. So I pepper sprayed, and then I realized I was running out. I had about half range. And I knew I had one more spray left in my pepper spray. And so I asked Lisa, I was like, Lisa, where's your pepper spray? I need more pepper spray. And she said, I can't find it. And that's when I turned around and looked, and she had actually, in the commotion, we kind of backed off the side of the road or towards the edge of the road a bit. And she actually fell off and kind of down a little embankment. And I'm going to say we're probably almost a minute into the ordeal at that point. And I turned and looked, saw her laying down there. Her feet were downhill. Her head was up, like almost on the road. But it was too steep. She couldn't climb up. And the sow was below her. The sow's head was like less than a foot away from Lisa's feet, and just growling and snarling at her. And I knew my pepper spray didn't have enough range to reach the sow down there. And I had one shot left with him. So that's when everything kind of slowed down, stopped. And I'm like, okay, what do we do here now? Like, I was waving my hiking poles at it, and this thing wouldn't leave. And I was just waiting for this thing to take a bite out of Lisa's foot. And so I had, like I said, I had one shot left in my pepper spray. So I just leaned over as far as I could down the hill, and I sprayed the sow, and the sow left Lisa and then circled around and came back up on the road again then and came at me. And that gave Lisa a chance to roll over and get up the hill. And she grabbed rocks and started throwing rocks then as the sow was coming towards me. And I, of course, out of pepper spray now, so I actually hit the bear with my hiking pole. Took my hiking pole, and between that and the rocks, that finally deterred it, and it ran back into the woods then.
Wow. So this is serious. Yeah, I mean, this is a big-time confrontation. This is not scaring the bears off. You're actually physically engaged with the bear.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, you know, like I've been around bears lots and heard lots of bear attacks and encounters. I tell everybody this wasn't a bear attack. Nobody got bit. It was a very, very serious encounter, but it all happened in the span of about, I'm going to say, a maximum of 20 feet. And there's some things that I just don't remember. People ask me, what was the dog doing? I don't know. I know when Lisa was laying there, the dog was right kind of beside her knees. That probably kept the bear back a little bit, I'm guessing. But I don't know where the cubs were when I was facing Lisa doing that last spray at the sow. I don't know where the cubs were at that point. But yeah, it doesn't get any more serious than that.
Yeah. So then what did you do? Now the bears are gone, and obviously you're in shock. You're still worried about maybe the bears coming back. What did you do at that point?
So at that point, we started walking backwards down the hill. We both picked up a bunch of rocks. There was a bunch of loose rock on the road. So the bear was about, I don't know, 10, maybe 20 feet back in the woods, kind of paralleling the road, still walking towards us. But we just kept walking backwards and throwing rocks in the woods, and it followed us for maybe 50 yards or something like that, and then left. And then we kind of started running downhill, looking over our shoulder pretty much constantly. We got about another kilometer down the hill and met up with the rest of the group then. But even still, we got around kind of the first corner, and Lisa and I stopped and kind of took a survey of, you know, is everybody okay? What, you know, I had actually inhaled a bunch of pepper spray. Lisa had some in her eyes, but she thought she was fine. She kind of bruised her hip when she fell. But other than that, we were fine. And so we met up with the group and kind of told them what happened, and yeah, let's leave. So we left ran back down to the highway again, and then by that time the adrenaline had finally worn off, and Lisa's eyes were really starting to burn her. So we took her into the clinic then in Grand Cache, which is about 15 minutes away, and got her eyes flushed out.
Okay. And so when did it really start to sink in what you just experienced?
You know, I think for me it was probably the next day. The next 2 days were actually really hard on me, knowing that I should have been and could have been dead. It gives the guy a different perspective and different outlook on life for sure. And then, you know, then people started hearing about it. I wrote my blog that night about it and posted that. And then people are calling me and, hey, what happened? What happened? So I started telling the story of it. And part of my reasoning, like I was actually up till about 3:30 that night writing the blog because I wanted to write the blog so I could forget the details. And surprisingly, I didn't have any issues. A lot of people asked how I slept. I slept fine. Noises bothered me for about 2 or 3 days. And actually, ironically, I thought I was over it. And last night, we were camping out by Edmonton. And about midnight, we were sitting around the campfire, my wife and I, and I heard something in the woods. And it sounded like it was a rabbit, like, or a bird or something. It was dark out, obviously. Something rustling in the leaves, and I got chills right through my head, right down to my toes, and I told my wife, let's go inside.
I don't blame you. Yeah.
So it's still, you know, it's a mental fight. We're going back up there again on Sunday, Lisa and I both, and a couple other people as well. So hoping to, you know, I don't want to say closure because it sounds really serious, but hoping to go back up there and obviously spend a little bit of time at that spot and kind of reflect on it and, you know, how fortunate we really were.
So are you going up there to run again, or are you going up there to just kind of confront what you went through?
Well, both. We're going up there to run because we both want to run that leg of the race before the actual race day, because race day is 3.5 weeks away now. So I don't want my next trip to be past there to be during the race. And I'll be running by there, I'm going to say, probably 8 or 10 o'clock at night. So I'd like to go by there once before the race day.
So you're determined to go ahead with the race, even though it's going to take you back to that same spot, and this time it's going to take you there at night?
Yeah. People always say runners are a crazy bunch. You know what? I agree with you. If it was easy, I don't know that I would do it. I started with half marathons. Well, I started with a 5K, and I realized I like pushing myself and challenging myself, and this is one more way that I can, you know, that I can challenge. It's not going to be easy by any means, but, you know, I want to push myself through it, and I know I can do it. And my wife and I last night were actually talking about, you know, mentally, the mental part of race day. How am I going to... I've got to run all night, too, on that race. So it's going to be a struggle for sure, but I think I know I can do it. I'm going to do it.
I'm sure you will. Look, the race is nothing compared to what you've already been through. That's one way to look at it.
Yeah. So what I'm focusing on now is educating people about, not so much about the incident, but about bear spray. A lot of people use bear spray, carry bear spray, but have no idea how it works or the limitations of it. So a couple of days after the bear encounter, we actually had a little training session with our run group here in Grand Prairie. There was about 20 of us, and I fired off a can of pepper spray. And everybody was shocked at how little there was in there. Most of it only lasts 7 to 10 seconds.
So tell me what appeals to you about doing the Canadian Death Race, notwithstanding what you've experienced in the training. What is it that has drawn you to this event? And describe the event for those people who don't know a lot about it.
So last year I did the Golden Ultra, which is a 60-kilometer, it's 85 kilometers over 3 days. The second day is 60 kilometers. That was my first ultra, and that was my second marathon distance. And people always ask me, are you going to do the death race? Are you going to do the death race? And that, you know, the death race is a big, very popular race here, well, and across Canada too. But right in our backyard, I said, I got no desire to do the death race. And then when I finished Golden Ultra, I said, you know what, this is, I enjoy this. I need to do this death race. So I talked to my running coach and I said, hey, is this something I can do? And she said, by all means, set your mind to it and do it. So I started training for it in January, I guess. And, you know, it's been a journey for sure. The death race course, it's 125 kilometers, 17,000 feet of elevation change, and it goes up over three mountain summits. So it's not about, there's a lot of people run that race in a relay. There's a couple hundred that do it as soloists as well, so.
Well, Phil, I wish you the best of luck in the death race in just a few weeks. And like I say, you probably, in a way, are more prepared for anything now that you've been through this experience in training. That's not what training is typically supposed to do to prepare you for the race, but it's prepared you in many ways. So I hope you have a great experience, and I hope this is the last time you encounter a bear when you're running. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
That is Phil Troyer, a runner from Alberta who's training for the Canadian Death Race in early August. Coming up next, a woman with a remarkable story to tell, escaping domestic violence and running every single day. For some, they are a brother, a sister, a mother, or a father. But for all of us, they are heroes. Show your support for the men and women of the Canadian Armed Forces. Join iRun at the 11th Annual Canada Army Run. Presented by BMO, in support of Soldier On and the Support Our Troops Fund. Join us as we run, walk, and roll through the streets of Ottawa Gatineau with our military in Canada's most inspiring race. The 2018 Canada Army Run, September 23rd. This is no ordinary race. Register at armyrun.ca. Our next guest on iRun Radio has an incredible story to tell. She was a victim of domestic violence who started running every single day. And now after completing marathons and ultramarathons and finding a new partner, she is in a much better place and she is still running. Leanne Loney, thank you very much for joining us on iRun Radio.
Thank you for having me.
So you have had these long running streaks at different times, and I gather in some ways they have lined up with major events in your life, including escaping from domestic violence. Is that right?
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about that. The first streak that you did was 100 days long of running every single day?
Yeah, up where I live in Abitibi, in northwestern Quebec, there were four friends who got together in the November of 2013 and threw something out there on Facebook encouraging people up here to be active, and they called it the Défi 100 Mile, so the 100-mile challenge. So the objective was to run 1 mile a day for 100 days to help people get over the long winter up here, because for us, our snow goes away at the end of April. Sometimes in May, we still have snow hanging
around.
So I saw that, and things were not going that well in my life. At home with my ex, the father of my kids. So I kind of threw myself into running because it was the one thing that was holding me together during that time. I'm a teacher, and I was also having a difficult year teaching. So my break was when I got to go running after work before going to pick up my kids at the daycare or at the after-school service. So when I saw it, the 100-mile challenge, I started on it, and it allowed me to meet a whole bunch of people up here in different areas. So I'd go to races, and people like, oh, yeah, and they would know who I was. And I'm like, oh, who are you? Because they would see me posting online, and they would see pictures that I was putting up. And I saw some other people as well, who I became friends with, who had a lot higher mileage than just 1 mile a day. So there was one woman named Tanya Rancour, who's from a running family where there's seven or eight brothers who travel around the world doing marathons together. And one of them is her dad. So she did a lot higher mileage than me, and I was trying to keep up to her. So instead of just doing 1 mile a day, I focused on trying to do an average of 10 kilometers a day.
10 kilometers a day,
and,
okay.
Yeah. And a week before the end of it was when my separation occurred. I lived for a night of terror, as I called it, and I ended up leaving the next day, and my mom drove up here to help me out, and I was in a women's shelter for a week. So it made it more difficult for me to maintain the streak of running each day, because my mom wasn't allowed to come into the women's shelter because she was not a resident there. So I'd have to find other ways that I could try to get it in. Some of the people who were on doing the 1 mile a day challenge with me, I had people offer to let me come to their house and use their treadmill, which I never did. I just did a smaller loop around where I was when my kids were with my mom. So it created a community for me. And what I was going through, adapting to the change in life and being in the women's shelter, when the 100-day challenge finished, I was emotionally done, just trying to deal with everything I had to deal with in my personal life.
Yeah.
So I took a break for a few days, and I had signed up to do Around the Bay that year, but because of the situation, now being single with three kids, I wasn't able to make the trip down. But I had already signed up to do the Mississauga Marathon, which was on my 35th birthday. So I did everything in my power to make sure I could still go and do that race. And when I came back from doing the Mississauga Marathon, I decided, well, I'm going to do another streak. And that one lasted me, I can't remember how many days exactly, around 500 or more days.
500 or more, so longer than a year.
Yeah. And there'd be times where we're like, okay, I'm not going to run tonight. And then somebody would go, how many days has it been? And I would count. I'm like, oh, I think it was like 467. I'm like, ah, that's not a good number to stop at. I got to keep going. So I'd put my stuff on. And sometimes I'd head out at 11:30 at night when my kids were visiting their father. And that's when I would get I tried to do a minimum of just 2 kilometers a day. And that included even after doing an 80-kilometer trail race. The next day we drove.
Yeah, so you've since done a bunch of marathons and ultra marathons and other races as well. So you've been doing a lot. That's great.
Yeah, in 2014 to recover from the separation, and I thought it'd be a lot better to go running than to just go out to bars. So I focused on myself, and I signed up for a half Ironman to do in 2015. So in 2014, I did 5 marathons, 2 ultra marathons, and a bunch of 5K races as well.
Wow. And how did running help you during this difficult transition in your life?
Well, having 3 kids at home, when the separation occurred, my youngest was 3. I had a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. So in teaching, I teach a bunch of teenagers, and sometimes there would be stressful stuff going on at work or other stuff I had to deal with outside of work. And when I could go for a run, it made me a better mom. I was happier and more grounded when I was able to go pick up my kids. And a happier mom makes for a happier life for everybody all around.
Yeah, well, good for you. And now I understand you're married again. You have a very supportive partner. Your kids are a little bit older, and running is one of many things you do now. Is that right?
Yeah, sometimes, last year there's a triathlon up here, so everybody in the family, my husband has 2 kids, so there were 2 kids doing the kids' triathlon, and the rest of us did the 5K race.
Hmm.
And in previous years, my goal had been to win the women's division of the 5K race. I think I won it 3 years in a row. And last year, I shifted my focus to family. So my 10-year-old daughter, she ran her first 5K with me. So I stuck beside her the whole time. But it was a whole different experience to be there with her and to give her some pointers and encouragement throughout the race.
Look, it's so inspiring the way you describe how you felt like you had a choice of either going out and having a drink and hanging out in a bar or going for a run during this difficult time in your life, and you chose to go for a run every day. You chose the healthy, constructive option, and that made a difference. I find that really remarkable. Good for you.
Thanks. And the first little while, it was in 2015 that I finally took a break. October 31st was my last day of running. And I told people I knew, I'm like, okay, I joined the gym. I'm going to do CrossFit, try to do something else. And my goal is not to run at all for 1 month. And I think 3 or 4 days later, I went running. And one woman I know who's a runner and a biker, she does triathlons as well. She saw me, she was on her bike. She's like, hey, you're like, you were running. I saw you. Because I live in a small city, so people see me all the time.
You couldn't stay away from it.
No, it becomes a part of you. I was a wrestler in university, and I would sometimes run. I did a lot of weight training, and I competed across Canada. And I always wanted to be a runner, and I figured when I retired from wrestling, I needed to do something physically. I couldn't just stop sports altogether. And running races allow people to be competitive. If they want to, you know, some people their focus is just to go out there and do it and have fun. But I liked winning, and when I started running, I wasn't very fast at all. My goal was to do a 5K in 30 minutes, and that was in 2011. And 3 years later, my goal was to do a 5K in under 22 minutes. So I focused the whole summer. I kept going to 5K races, trying to get under 22. And I couldn't. I got 22.00, 22.01, 22.02 so many times.
Yeah.
So I've abandoned that challenge. But it allowed me to push myself and focus on me, not just on babies and changing diapers. So once it's in you running, it's hard to abandon it.
Even when I
think, oh, I just need a break. I know I'm going to feel so good when I'm done running. That it's worth it to get out there.
Absolutely.
Even if I have no energy.
Well, it's such a powerful example that you've set, Leanne. I really appreciate you joining us on the show today. Congratulations on what you've done, and best of luck as you continue running. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That is Leanne Loney, a runner in Quebec. Coming up next, how pairing visually impaired runners with guides can create some wonderful relationships. For some, they are a brother, a sister, a mother, or a father. But for all of us, they are heroes. Show your support for the men and women of the Canadian Armed Forces. Join iRun at the 11th Annual Canada Army Run. Presented by BMO, in support of Soldier On and the Support Our Troops Fund. Join us as we run, walk, and roll through the streets of Ottawa Gatineau with our military in Canada's most inspiring race. The 2018 Canada Army Run, September 23rd. This is no ordinary race. Register at armyrun.ca. Jason Dunkerley is a Canadian Paralympian who's one of the volunteer leaders of Achilles Ottawa, which combines visually impaired athletes with guides to help them train and compete in races. Jason, it's great to talk to you again. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, an update on how you're doing. We've talked to you many times over your career as a runner, an athlete, a Paralympian. Tell me a little bit about how your running's going.
I'm doing well. I competed in Rio in 2016 in the Paralympics, along with Josh, who guided me for about 6 years. We were a team, and we came fifth in the 1500 in Rio, and then sort of quasi-retired, I guess, but came back last year and competed on the track with another guide runner. Josh had an injury after Rio, so I competed along with Jeremy Venn, who's a local runner who I trained with. I was part of our training group previously before he went to the States on a scholarship. So we competed last year, and then I had this urge to run a marathon, which I hadn't done before. So actually ran two marathons over this year and competed a little bit on the track, but kind of stepping back a bit from that now and just kind of running mainly for fun and health and enjoyment at the moment. And, that's going well for sure.
After all that time running, you'd never done a marathon before.
Well, I thought about it a lot and wanted to, but I think just with sort of the cycle of running track each year, I had this sense that, you know, if I run a marathon, it's going to make me slow down on the track and take a long time to recover from. And I'm sure that was probably a bit of a false illusion, but that was kind of,
but even so, you had other priorities, right? So,
well, I mean, track was sort of what else we, until recently, for sure.
So what was that experience like, running your first marathon, and now you've done two?
Yeah, it was fantastic. I'm so glad I had the chance I don't know if I can call myself a marathoner, because I think of marathoners as having run, you know, 10 or 20, and there's a lot of people like that around, but it was an amazing experience. Both were amazing. I mean, you know, you in training, you go up to maybe 20 or 21 miles, and after that, I mean, you're in unknown territory, and particularly in the first one, I was just hanging on and hoping for dear life that, you know, that you hope your system isn't going to shut down, but incredibly rewarding experiences for sure.
Yeah, Jason, if you've run a marathon, even one, you can call yourself a marathoner. That's totally, totally fine. You don't have to do 20 of them. You're all set. So let's talk about Achilles Ottawa, because we've touched on it before, and we've talked to other members of the club, and there's just some great work has been done in matching up visually impaired runners with guides, and I know it's been a rewarding experience for both the people in those many pairings that have happened. But tell us a little bit about how the club is going and some of the recent success stories.
Yeah, we're so fortunate. Ottawa is you know, an incredible running community and incredible sport community. And, you know, we've had Achilles Ottawa since 2010. And I think we got to a point sort of maybe last year or earlier this year where we had a core group of people, you know, maybe seven or eight runners that were coming out on a pretty regular basis. But it was starting to feel like we needed a bit of energy or a bit of a spark of, you know, finding some new people and just sort of trying to grow things a little bit. And so we changed the location of our run from over by Mooney's Bay to Tunney's Pasture, and we started meeting on Saturdays instead of Thursday evenings for our weekly group run. And it's really sort of taken off a little bit. And, you know, since about March or so, we've had, you know, I would say six or seven new people coming out, and we have really decent sized groups, kind of 12, 14 people on a weekly basis. And it's just, the whole idea is really to try to build a community of support for runners, I would say. Primarily runners who are blind and visually impaired, but also, the guide runners who enable us, you know, to do what we do. And it's got a really great vibe, at the moment. And, you know, so we have a weekly group run. We have people, in many cases kind of meeting up through the week, with guides and blind vision paired runners to do their own running as well. And then we try to key on sort of a few main races each year. So particularly Ottawa Race Weekend, and then the Army Run. And then recently we try to do roughly one trip out of town each year. So a group of us went to the Achilles Hope and Possibility Run in New York City. So Achilles International is based in New York City, and they have this run every year, the Achilles Run in New York. So we've been a few times, and it had been about 3 years since we were down there last time. So we had a group of 12 runners there this year, and, you know, a really great weekend, and, you know, people ran well, and got to enjoy the city, and just a great experience.
And what's that experience like, Jason, when you find a good match and the two of you run well together and there's that connection and you share an experience? Tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, I think we always say running is individual. It's an individual kind of a sport. But I think truly as a sort of guide running and blind and visually impaired running, you're working as a team. And I think, in terms of the physical, what it's like, you know, when you're having a great run, when you're sort of running in rhythm and a nice rhythm with someone, it's a pretty amazing, pretty special feeling, I would say, for myself at least. But also, I think just sort of the sense of community and camaraderie that develops from that. And I think it also keeps everyone sort of on track and accountable. If you've made a commitment to myself, if I arranged to meet up with a guide runner, I mean, gotta show up. I said I'd be there, and I think that it works the opposite way too. So I think we sort of hold each other to account and support and encourage each other.
Yeah, lots of people have training buddies. This takes it to another level, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does. I think, you know, there's a sense of group, and I think within our group, within Achilles, we have, you know, and we welcome everyone, regardless of the experience that the people have in running, whether they've been at it for a while or whether they're completely new and, you know, running for the first time. And but I think the common sort of denominator is that we're all there to support each other and encourage each other and get the most out of the running, but also just out of the time together too, and just sort of the social network and the social connection that we have.
I know there are some people who look at it and think, you know, I'd like to do that, but I probably don't know enough about it, or I wouldn't be the right person. But you seem to be suggesting that just about anybody could be a guide runner. So is it the kind of thing that's open to anybody, or do you have to have some special knowledge?
No, there's no special knowledge at all. I mean, we welcome everyone to come out. And what we do and when we have someone who's new to guiding is just have them run along with one of our groups that's kind of an more experienced guide runner and a blind or visually impaired runner, just to see how it works. And, you know, we're more than happy to answer questions. And I always kind of say it's pretty simple. It's, you know, there's a few different kind of nuances to the technique that people like when it comes to being guided, depending a little bit on the, some people have a bit of vision, some people have less or more, but essentially I think it comes down to sort of looking out for the other person and kind of what's in front of them and being the eyes for that person. And then I think just as you run with the blind runner as a guide, you get a sense of kind of what the information they need. And like I say, it could be more or less, but it's not complicated. I think it's really just, you know, looking out for the other person in terms of curves or turns or changes in the terrain and that kind of thing.
But there's so much trust that's there, obviously. If you're a visually impaired runner, you're really putting yourself in the hands of another runner, and that's a responsibility, and there's so much value in that kind of relationship. I'm sure it's enriching for both people, but you're basically, when you're running with a guide runner, if you have a high level of visual impairment, you're just counting on that other person to tell you where to run, and you're running as hard as you can with the trust that you're not going to get hurt or collide with anybody or anything like that, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's it. But I think we're so fortunate. Like I say, we have amazing guide runners, and I would say in the time that we've had Achilles running, I mean, I can't even really think of I'm touching wood as I say this, but I can't think of any kind of sort of serious accident that anyone's really had. I mean, people have the odd, you know, maybe they trip over a crack in the sidewalk or something like that, but it's very, very few and far between. And I would say that it probably happens, you know, about as much as it would happen for an able-bodied person.
Sure.
So it really works out. It's very safe, and it's not complicated at all.
Yeah. Well, it's very cool, and I know it's been a rewarding experience for many people that I've talked to who have served as guides, and I've spoken to you and other visually impaired athletes who have gotten a lot out of the relationship, obviously, as well. Jason, it's great to talk to you. If people want to find out more about Achilles Ottawa, what should they do?
Yeah, they could visit our website, and we're actually in the process of modifying it at the moment, and it should be in sort of its new updated format in the next couple of weeks, but people can visit AchillesOttawa.ca, or they can also send an email to AchillesOttawa@gmail.com if they, you know, want information just to find out more about our weekly group run or even to be added to our listserv. But we certainly welcome everyone.
Great stuff. Jason, always great to talk to you. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, Mark.
That is Jason Dunkerley of Achilles Ottawa. Coming up on next week's show, we're going to talk to 3 federal cabinet ministers who are runners. Thank you for joining us. Hope you have a great week.